I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world, from the heart of the Middle East in the UAE. What a week it's been for the military-industrial complex between nuclear powers, India and Pakistan, Israel and Gaza and Yemen, the US and Iran, Russia and Ukraine. We're moving further and further away from when freedom fighter Nelson Mandela said, "Let there be peace for all, let there be work, bread, water, and salt for all." It's 31 years since Nelson Mandela's inauguration as president of South Africa after he saw violence as the only means to end an apartheid system backed by Britain, the USA, and Israel. Mandela visited here in Dubai, and I got to interview him here. But next week, it'll be the turn of Donald Trump, his visit to this region coinciding with Nakba Day, commemorating the 1948 ethnic cleansing of historic Palestine. Joining me now from Jerusalem is the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. He's also the co-host of the podcast Our Middle East, An Insider's View, and former Secretary General of the World Jewish Congress, Dr. Dan Diker.
Pleasure to be with you, Afshin.
Dan, it's been 5 years. Not much has happened in those 5 years, clearly. No, a lot has happened. And of course, just in the past week, if people are watching this, we don't know what's happening between India and Pakistan, whether that's going to be even worse than it has been in the mid-portion of this week. And of course, the world has seen, the Global South certainly, the celebrations in Moscow of the 80th anniversary of the victory of the Nazis. But I think the main question, Dan, first off, is what do you make of Trump avoiding Israel next week? He's coming here to Dubai. He's not going to Israel. And that's just after Trump made a deal with Ansar Allah, the Houthis of Yemen. Here's a Japanese paper saying, Donald Trump said the U.S. would stop its bombing campaign against Houthi rebels in Yemen in response to assurances from the Iranian-backed group that it would halt attacks on ships.
Well, first of all, Afshin, great to be with you. My first question to you is why do you believe what you read? Don't believe what you read, Afshin. I mean, you more than anyone else should know that. We have to come above ground. We have to come above ground and smell the air and be very clear about what we're seeing. If I were Donald J. Trump, I wouldn't visit Israel. I wouldn't visit Israel either. You know why? Because Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is the only foreign leader to have visited the White House within weeks of one another. And clearly, Donald J. Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are very, very strong allies, and they've discussed everything they need to discuss. Right now, President Trump hasn't signed a deal with Sana, but clearly he has put the Houthis on notice.
Were you shocked? Sorry to interrupt there, but I mean, you know, you say they don't need to talk, but were you shocked when you heard that in an off-the-cuff statement during a press conference with Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney?
Absolutely nothing shocks me when it comes from Donald J. Trump. He's President Trump speaks Middle East, and that means he keeps people on their heels, and he is an economic warrior. He's a political warrior, and he right now is pursuing a vision of stability, security, and perhaps prosperity for the Middle East that really is rooted in major power projection by the United States, short of war. And I think that the damage that Israel did to the Iranian regime back Houthis by hitting their airport following this massive series of barrages by the Iran back Houthis on Israel taught the Houthis enough of a lesson that Donald Trump wants to go and speak with them. I don't know whether his statement that they don't want to fight anymore, how much that holds water. They're far away from an agreement, but Trump is definitely weighing his options and seeking to stabilize a region that will not be able to be stable unless the Iranian nuclear program and the Iranian regime are eliminated.
You sound like Trump's new national security advisor. I don't know whether you're applying for the job. But of course, the Israeli retaliation for the successful destruction or a huge hole in the ground in your Ben-Gurion airport, which is a military target, arguably, because military planes in Israel do land there.
No, they don't. No, that is our national airport. And in fact, Afshin, if truth be told, that was a major attack against the sovereignty of the state of Israel. And really, I think if you are either you or I were military pilots or chiefs of staff, we would launch a massive attack against the Houthis. The Houthis are
Well, people can look up whether military planes have landed at Ben-Gurion, but whatever the case is, the Saudi UAE-backed titular foreign minister of Yemen, Ansar Allah, Houthi, said, what is Israel doing blowing up a civilian airport in Sana'a where all the aid comes from? That's nothing to do with Houthi this or Houthi that. That airport was built over generations, and Israel has a... So you united all the forces of Yemen with the Houthi and Ansar Allah movement by bombing that airport.
Well, I think differently. I think the fact that, first of all, the Iranian regime sends all of its... sends its weaponry and its ammunition through the airport, gets to the Houthis. The Houthis are going to pay a big price. And I can tell you, coming out of Jerusalem, that the state of Israel will not tolerate these ongoing, unprovoked assaults against its sovereignty and against its citizens from the Houthis or from the Iranian regime. So if I were in the Iranian regime right now, I would be very, very nervous.
Yeah, I'll get to Iran in a moment. Iran is not, you're treating the Yemenis as if Britain is just a US-backed state, and Britain doesn't have sovereignty, arguably. I mean, you talk about the fact that the Houthis are going to suffer and all of this kind of thing. How long is this war on Gaza now? 19 months, 20 months? Hamas has no air force.
No, the question is...
No artillery, no tanks. Israel has failed to... Actually, Israel has ended up increasing the numbers in Hamas, whereas Yemen has hypersonic missile systems that haven't been... that are not Iranian, that can hit Ben-Gurion Airport and bypass the THAAD system and your so-called Iron Dome. I mean, clearly... There's no way Israel is going to beat Yemen. No one ever has done. So why does Israel still speak like this, as if it's going to beat Hamas and beat Yemen, when it's clearly never going to beat Hamas if it hasn't beaten it in 20 months, is it?
Well, actually, that's not accurate. The former administration under President Joe Biden placed constraints on Israel that prevented Israel from winning the war early on. Let's remember, the
you
reason
can't
that
win
we're in
a
the
war against a guerrilla movement. They have no artillery, they have no planes. You're starving the women and children as your only means of trying to do something, but you can't win against a guerrilla war. The Americans couldn't win against the Afghans. The Americans couldn't win against the Vietnamese. You can't do that, can you? That's not how warfare works.
How did the United States do against Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Iraq and Syria? You don't find them there anymore because the United States under David Petraeus beat them. Israel will destroy the Hamas.
I'm sorry you mentioned ISIS in Syria, because there are pictures of your Prime Minister Netanyahu with ISIS in the Golan Heights in Syria. Why did Al-Qaeda and ISIS never attack Israel? No, I think we know the answer.
Why is Yemen attacking Israel? We share no border with Yemen, because Yemen is ideologically driven to our destruction, because it submits to the Mahdi and the sense of Shiite radical eschatology.
It may well
the same
do.
Thing with Hamas.
Dan, it may well believe that, but it's also saying that it has a duty to have solidarity with those being the subject of what they say is genocide. So therefore, under international law, it has a duty to attack Israel. I mean, one doesn't have to agree either way, but that's their position.
Listen, Afshin, if this were genocide in Gaza, Israel would be the worst genocidal enemy in the history of genocide. Let's parse out the numbers for the viewers. If there were 50,000 people that the Hamas is responsible for killing, because the Hamas is in violation of international law, hiding behind children, hiding in schools, hiding in UN compounds, hiding in hospitals. They commit double war crimes by shooting at Israeli children from behind Palestinian children. So if we want to talk about international law, let's talk about Hamas and the gross violation of international law. The only reason that Israel is in Gaza right now, as you know very well, even though you've been underground for 5 years, is that the Hamas mass murdered 1,400 children and women. It's all documented on GoPros, so you don't even have to ask the question, and you don't have to believe the Jews. You can believe the Hamas themselves. And the fact that Hamas kidnapped 251 people, including people from 20 countries, including the country, the UK and many other European countries, no country in the world would tolerate what the Hamas did on October 7th. Hamas will be destroyed and Israel will destroy it. And at the end of the day, you have to pay a price for victory. You know, as a Brit, that that Winston Churchill and the Brits paid a big price, but they bombed Dresden. How many civilians died in Dresden, Afshin?
In 1940, you're not as bad as Winston Churchill and the concentration camps of the Boer War. Look, I mean, obviously, October the 7th was one hell of an operation. Why does Israel place Israeli Jews right next to the Mossad headquarters, the big fashion Gilot shopping mall near Mossad HQ, where the A200 intelligence agencies are? Why is Israel deliberately placing Jews next to military facilities so they can be targeted by Yemen, by Hamas missiles potentially, less so by Hezbollah ones, because one has to admit that Israel's been successful against Hezbollah. Why is Israel putting Jews at risk?
That's not the question. The question is, why why is Hamas ensconcing itself in hospitals, UN compounds, residential buildings?
Yeah, but that's what I'm asking you. Why are you?
Israel's the only free country, as you know.
It's
as
the
you
worst
know,
country to be a Jew in. You know that. Ehud Olmert,
what's that?
Former Israeli Prime Minister, said Israel is closer to a civil war than ever before. You've just explained the Hamas attack of October the 7th, which killed more Jews, you maintain, than any time since the Holocaust. So what we're talking about is Israel is a dangerous place for Jews. It's a dangerous place for Jews. You admit this. And it's now close to civil war. You see the demonstrations in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem from Jews against the genocide. So is it the end of Israel? Are we now approaching that?
First of all, it could be the end of Western civilization. You know, as an Indian Brit, that Britain is in greater danger of imploding because of the penetration of Muslims and the.
I'm talking about Israel. That
are raping children across the United Kingdom, which may be one of the reasons why you moved to Dubai, because if that happened in Dubai, they would be executed within 24 hours.
No,
Israel is the only free.
Well, we'll get back to this. Dr. Dan Dyker.
You want to talk about genocide?
Dr. Dan Dyker, I'll stop you there. More from the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the president of the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, Dr. Dan Dyker. Dan, in part one, I was asking you whether it was the end of Israel. You said it's the end of Britain if continued Muslim immigration to Britain was coming through. I think it's a huge number.
The Pakistani grooming gangs that are raping your children, which is in the news in the UK every single day.
I think this type of deflection is really important here, isn't it? Because I mean, that is a separate program. We could have you on for a whole program about that. Of course, some might say that actually it's in the indigenous white community that grooming is greater. We're going to look at the figures on that. This kind of deflection has been there again and again. Why will you not respond to whether Israel is close to civil war? And if a country that continually deflects from what most of the world believes is a genocide, a Holocaust, committed by Israel, albeit supported by Britain, the European Union, and the United States, we have to get down to nuclear weapons. Why? What happens to nuclear weapons in Israel if there is a civil war?
Let's talk about genocide option, because you've misrepresented.
No, can you just answer the questions as I ask them? I think we can get on to the genocide, because I know you take umbrage at the idea there is genocide ongoing. But
there's genocide ongoing.
But we know Israel is in crisis. Would you accept that Israel is in crisis? You yourself say it's not safe to be a Jew in Israel. What would October 7th?
It's the safest country in the world to be a Jew, because we know who our enemies are. And if you would just give me a chance, if you give me the opportunity to answer, I think we could help the audience understand a few things. Number one,
most Jews are leaving, I should just say, from Israel. But go ahead.
Most Jews are leaving.
Do you not have mass immigration
We have mass immigration from countries in Europe, because people can't go out and get a cup of coffee without being attacked. Just ask the Jews of Amsterdam that were hunted.
83,000 left in 2024. Do they not count as Jews?
Do they not count
as Jews anymore to you? Because I've heard you say that Jews who are not in Israel have no sovereignty. So are you anti-Semitic?
That's a ridiculous statement. Do you understand what sovereignty means? Sovereignty means being sovereign means having being part of the nation state of the Jewish people. Being a Jew in the diaspora is being a Jew that is not yet sovereign because they haven't moved to Israel. That's the meaning of sovereignty. Israel is the strong horse in the Middle East often. Do you know what it is in Arabic? Al-Faras al-Asil. That is the strong horse.
Remember, you have nuclear weapons.
What's that?
You have nuclear weapons. No one is doubting how strong Israel is.
Okay, that's militarily. Wonderful. So that's why the Arab world. That's why the Arab world is partnering with Israel, because Israel is the strong horse. And today, President Trump is the strong horse in the Middle East. And everyone knows that the weak horse in the Middle East is Iran and its death cult proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis. And therefore, the Iranian regime is teetering. They are scared. And that's why they're engaging in these negotiations, which are a real problem, because anybody who knows the Iranian regime, they know that they're very sophisticated carpet weavers and chess players. And they are facing American negotiators who are not well-versed in
It's
Iranian
safer to be a Jew in Iran, is it not? There are 100 synagogues in Iran right now. No, they don't have any guards. They have no guards at the gates of the synagogues in Iran. Your synagogues have to be protected by the full might of British, European Union, and American arms to protect the lives of Jews.
There are intelligence agents arresting Jews in Iran for
fraud. I lived in Iran. Anti-Semitism is a punishable crime in Iran. Jews hold high positions in all aspects, actually in the media in Iran. You know that's not true. So I suppose what I should ask you now is, why don't you like Steve Witkoff, Donald Trump's
envoy? Oh, he's a great
envoy.
Guy. No, Steve Witkoff's a great guy. He's been doing a great job as somebody came from the real estate industry. He didn't come from the foreign policy community. He has his hands full on three different files. He's got the Russia-Ukraine file. He's got the Gaza file. He's got now he's got the Iranian file. I mean, he's really working 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's that the issue is that
he doesn't want a war with Iran like you do.
Well, I think it's Iran that wants a war. It's Iran. Do you remember? Are you old enough to remember 1979? Two statements option. Remember this: death to America, death to Israel. Those statements have been made since 1979. And if I were you, I would believe the Ayatollah Khomeini and Khamenei, because the IRGC...
You know perfectly well, comments like this are just... So what I can quote Netanyahu from much more recently about Amalek and the genocide of the Arab world. I don't think that gets us anywhere. But you say Witkoff.
Witkoff has clearly been
central to the negotiations with Ansar Allah, central to negotiations with Hamas. Trump negotiators were there talking with Hamas. Is that why you tweeted, would we allow a journalist to perform brain surgery? I noticed you tweeting Douglas Murray there, who was criticizing Witkoff. Isn't it clear that the firing of Mike Waltz, the National Security Advisor?
Mike Waltz.
I think you consider he was fired? Because I don't think you think much of the United Nations. You think about as much as Donald Trump does of the UN. So a appointment as ambassador to the UN isn't a promotion.
Option. Listen to me very well. Anybody that has half a brain in his head knows that the UN today has become a PR agency for the Hamas, and they have been a PR agency for the PLO since 1971. And therefore, from our point of view, the UN should be put on trial, and everyone from Secretary Guterres to Albanese should be held to account for their bloodthirsty anti-Semitic a comment.
I don't think it's necessarily anti-Semitism, but a lot of the world agrees with you on that, you have to admit. Even pro-Palestine, pro-Iran people probably agree with you on that. But my question really is about how you think the locus of influence is working within this Trump administration, and whether you think Witkoff going to become U.S. ambassador to the UN rather than National Security Advisor, and the influence of Witkoff, means that Israel is out of the picture. That Trump might have visited Israel next week, actually, if he was listening to people like like Stephen Miller more. Stephen Miller's still there, of course, as an advisor, but listening to people like Walt. And this signals the fact that Trump, when he sees MBS, when he sees MBZ here in the UAE, is going to be told, look, there's, you've got to stop this. We need a ceasefire, and Israel must not be allowed to get its wish for a war in Iran, which will be your legacy as president of the United States.
Well, first of all, I think President Trump's legacy in the United States is a man that brought the world the most consequential regional peace deal in the history of the modern Middle East. That's called the Abraham Accords. And in fact, if you want to talk about who wants a war with Iran, just talk about the Arab Sunni establishment, for whom the Iranians and their terror proxies.
I can just tell you, I'm speaking to you from Dubai. The UAE does not want a war with Iran. Why does do you think Israel is not getting its way? Why? What does it feel like there in Jerusalem? You've got huge opposition, as I said, civil war perhaps in your country, in Israel. Simultaneously, Trump is talking to MBS, to MBZ. It's clear from what MBS has said, backing the Arab League's statements on Gaza, recognizing it as a genocide. What does it feel like in Israel? I know you like MBS of Saudi Arabia, and yet you never quote him when MBS says that what you are doing is a genocide.
Well, first of all, MBS is not saying that what's happening is a genocide.
Yes, he has.
When he's talking about Hamas.
He has, on the record, MBS has called what you're doing a genocide.
It would be the worst genocide in the history of war crimes, option, because you've got 2.1 million people.
Let's not get into what the genocide was. I'm talking about MBS.
No, you're accused. Don't get into this genocide.
I'm saying MBS, who Trump is visiting in the next few days, calls it a genocide. You want some kind of alliance with Saudi Arabia. It's not going to happen, is it? Because of what you've been doing in Gaza. How is your group, the World Jewish Congress, going to cope with this new era in which most of the world is against Israel? They believe it's a genocide. They call it a Holocaust all around the world. You disagree with that, of course, and it's your right to disagree with those statements.
You are becoming a Hamas.
I'm asking you, how is Israel coping with this mentally as a nation, being so isolated as a nation in the world?
We're so isolated that I can tell you personally that I've visited five Arab countries in Europe who are begging us to be their partners in a new Middle East and bringing them to Washington. Israel is the strong horse in the Middle East. Israel is united. You can look at the polling numbers that we will be defeating Hamas, and we already destroyed Hezbollah.
Most Americans have an unfavorable opinion of Israel, according to the latest Pew Research poll. I mean, I think the main thing here is about Iran, actually.
It's complete
propaganda.
When
is Israel going to disarm its nuclear weapons so that both Israel and Iran can have nuclear inspections under the Non-Proliferation Treaty?
First of all, the only question here is when Iran's nuclear program will be destroyed, because its messianic commitment to destroy the United States and destroy Israel and the West is still there.
But you know, I'm talking about Israel's borrowed time. Nuclear weapons.
Regime is on borrowed time. I think you should be asking, when is the United Kingdom and when is India? And when is the United States going to give up its nuclear programs when it's faced with the same enemies who are accusing and threatening the exact same nuclear holocaust against the West? What you're doing is taking the position of the Hamas and the Hezbollah, which I think is unfortunate, because as somebody who was born in democratic India and lived in democratic Britain, I'm surprised that you would take the position.
I wasn't born in India.
Non-democratic countries.
I wasn't born in India. You were born in Kenya.
You were born in Kenya, which is also a
democracy.
I was
born in Cambridge, England, actually. But I mean, you know, I don't know where you were born. I don't know whether you were born in
New York. I'm a New York boy.
What are you doing in someone else's country is what a lot of people in the world are going to be asking right now, because they don't believe the mass emigration of those with, I don't know, melanin. Doesn't even work, does it, on all these Jews that came in from Europe? That's why you don't lie. 23andMe. Tell me about the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs and the role of Miriam Adelson, who was at Trump's inauguration. Is Sheldon Adelson the funder of your organization?
No, Sheldon, a blessed memory, is not the
funder. Is Miriam Adelson?
No, and Dr. Adelson is actually funding medical initiatives and doing a lot of her philanthropy in Israel, outside of Israel. We actually are, and pay attention to this, the only major policy institute that works Arabs and Jews side by side. Arab, we have Arab Muslim representatives of the JCFA in Washington, D.C., and we work with Arab Muslims in Israel, outside of Israel, because anybody that really wants to know what the Middle East is doing and is about should come to the JCPA. Our website is jcpa.org, so you can really get the best, truthful, independent, professional information on the Middle East. And that's why we work with people. We are a Middle Eastern think tank of Jews and Arabs, Muslims, Christians, Druze, and others, because that's what the real Middle East is about. So when people get beyond the propaganda nonsense of accusing Israel of these fraudulent claims, and instead of celebrating Israel as the only repository and free state in the entire Middle East, people will understand what the Middle East is really about.
Dr. Dan Diker, next time you'll have to come and tell us about Donald Trump's brother-in-law. We're out of time, alas. But Dr. Dan Diker, thank you.
Thank you, Afshin.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Monday with the University of Chicago's multi-award-winning co-author of the best-selling book, The Israel Lobby and US Foreign Policy, Professor John Mersheimer. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.